compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. The number, as ever, is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I noticed on Twitter shortly before I started the show this morning that a lady on Twitter had said, hey, I sent you a message on, Instagram, and could you please answer it? And so I got back to her, and I'll just tell this to you as a public service announcement. I do have an Instagram account. I'm never on it. And so I don't check messages. And if I went over there, you know, when was the last time I went over there? Gosh, I don't know. But if you would like to send me an email, and I'm going to read you one in just a minute. If you'd like to send me an email, I welcome your emails. And the easiest way to send it to me is just go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. And you'll see there where it says contact. And you can ignore the link to Facebook. I mean, yeah, I have a Facebook page too, but I'm never on that either. If you want to find me online, you'll find me on Twitter. But that doesn't really facilitate an email. You can't really send an email to somebody that way. So when you see at relevantradio.com/Patrick versus contact, there's a place there where you can send me an email. And it comes right to me. Doesn't go through a secretary or anything like that. It comes straight to me. And I'm more than happy to take a look at it. So if you've been wondering, how come I sent him a message on Instagram or on LinkedIn or on Facebook and he never answers, it's because I'm never there and I don't check messages there. But I am happy to hear from you. Same is true for that lady that sent me the note on Twitter. Now, here's an email that came in. This is from, I'm tempted to make him anonymous. And I think I will. I'm not going to use his name because I don't know if his name is actually his real name or not. So here goes. Dear Mr. Madrid, when I started listening to your show, I heard about all of these people who had problems and you seemed to have the answer for all of them. So I was wondering if you could help me with my problem. I'm an organic eating homeschool student where everything about me is basically different from every other kid I know. So on my 13th birthday, I got a phone full of parental restrictions, and I basically get made fun of for that all the time. And I used to be able to just brush it off, but now it's starting to destroy my mind to a point where I can't take it anymore. I try to do other things like bike to other people's houses or even just around my gated neighborhood, but I am not allowed to do that either. I have asked my parents numerous times if there is anything I can do to change that, but all they have ever said was, finish high school and then we'll talk. So I am now in eighth grade, and I can't take it anymore, to a point where I cry almost every day, and I have headaches all the time. I was wondering if you had any advice for what I should do. And if you would, please reply to me and tell me what day and hour of the show you answered this. I would appreciate that a lot. Thank you so much. Right, so Cyrus, let's make a note to, we'll send him a message just to let him know that I'm talking about his email right now. You don't have to send it now, but we'll get it sent to him a little bit later.
I'll send him the audio.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, there's so much I'd like to say. Now, I need to preface my remarks by, first of all, saying this. This is a 13-year-old child. This is a 13-year-old young man. Let me put it that way. So he's underage. He's still in his parents' home. He's at a time of life where there's a lot of great change. So ordinarily, I would not interact with a child like this, someone underage. I wouldn't interact with them without their parents' knowledge of this, and certainly not without their parents' permission. So when you hear kids call the program, I'm morally certain that mom is standing right next to the child, coaching the child what to say. And you know how kids are. If they hear a question on the phone, they might nod their head because they don't realize that you can't tell what they're saying if they just nod their head. So mom is there to help out with that, and that's always good. So the first thing is I'm deviating from my typical policy, which is to have an interaction like this with an underage person. But the reason is because I'm concerned, and Sam, I want to speak to you directly. Well, I just gave his name, sorry. I want to speak to you directly. I'm concerned about, first of all, that you're feeling the way you are. You said that you're crying a lot of the time, and you have headaches all the time. Hard to know if the headaches are caused by this issue or if it's something else. But the first thing I want to do is assure you that I'm really concerned that you don't go further down this road of being this unhappy, and that you not continue in a situation where you're feeling increasingly hopeless. Okay, so the first thing you need to do, I know you've talked to your mom and dad, and I know that you've at least asked them for permission to do these things that you mentioned, bike to a friend's house, that kind of thing. But what I'd like to ask you to do is, first of all, let your parents know that you sent me an email, show them the email, and then we're going to send you the link to the show where right now where I'm talking about this. And I'd like you to let your parents listen to that, to make sure that they're aware of this 100% right from the get-go. Now, the reason, and this, I guess, is also for your parents, the reason is that what you wrote to me suggests that maybe things are getting to the point for you where you don't know what to do, and you're seeking relief from these feelings of being ridiculed by your peers. You're seeking relief from people, you know, who maybe don't accept you. Maybe there's some bullying going on. Now, you mentioned that you're homeschooled, and I very much endorse homeschooling. But with the proviso that the children being homeschooled are not being overly sheltered. And this, I guess, is part of my thought process as I offer you this to talk to your parents about. And that would be my wife and I, we homeschooled our kids. And it's important to shelter your children from certain things that are bad and evil. You do have to shelter them from that. And I understand why your parents, if they gave you a cell phone, why they put parental restrictions on that. I understand why your buddies might make fun of you for that, because chances are their parents are not as responsible as your parents are. That's really a function of your parents loving you and looking out for you and wanting to keep you safe from the bad stuff that's out there. And trust me on this one, you can find the bad stuff very quickly, or it will find you very quickly when you're out on the open range of the internet with a smartphone. So what your parents did by having these controls, these parental, how did you put it, the parental restrictions on your phone, that in itself is a good thing. So don't resent them for that. I understand that because your buddies are making fun of you, that hurts, and I realize that, I mean, it's no fun to be the odd man out. It's no fun to be the kid who gets mocked for looking different or having different clothes or something different about the kid from the other kids. It's very common for them to pick that person out and start picking on them and mocking them. And I'm sorry you're having to go through that. Maybe you need to look for some different friends, quite frankly. And your mom and dad can help you with that. But if your quote-unquote friends are really being that abusive towards you, they're not really your friends, quite honestly. So perhaps that's one of the solutions would be to ask your mom and dad for, you know, what are some parameters I can have to look for some different friends? Maybe you don't need to, but that's something to think about. The parental restrictions, I think that ties in with the other thing. You mentioned organic eating and you're a homeschool student. So if I'm reading between the lines correctly, it sounds like maybe the people you know, your friends, they don't eat organic, or maybe they're not gluten-free, and maybe they're making fun of you because there are certain foods that you can't eat or you're not permitted to eat, that kind of thing. And I understand that too. It's another one of those areas where when kids find something different or what they consider to be odd about another kid, they'll start picking on that kid. And you happen to be that kid, and I'm really sorry that you're in that experience. So maybe you can do something about that. Maybe you can't. It really will depend upon what your parents' rules are. But here's where I'd like to really give you some advice with regard to your parents. Explain to them, Mom and Dad, I'm having headaches all the time. I'm crying every day. I feel trapped. I don't want to put words in your mouth. So if this is how you feel, share that with them. And whatever it is that you're feeling, share it with them and say, I got to the point where I felt like I didn't have any other options. So I wrote to Mr. Madrid and he read my letter on the air and he gave me some advice. But my main advice is for you to talk to your parents and say, I really need some help here. Can I have some more freedom? can I bike around our gated community? I mean, if it's gated, chances are there's very little that would pose a hazard to you, especially if you're in eighth grade. I mean, you're a young man, you know, you'll be in high school soon. So it's not inappropriate for a young man your age to go out on his bike and ride around. I mean, you don't want to ride in midtown Manhattan traffic. I wouldn't recommend that. But if you're in a gated community and it's your neighborhood and things are safe, I personally think, just having raised six sons of my own, there's nothing unreasonable about that. Now, it's obviously, it's your parents' decision. They have the authority. I have no authority in this matter. I'm only offering you some thoughts based upon my experience as a father. But as a dad, I would say, absolutely, go ride your bike. And where does your friend live? He lives over here. Well, yeah, you can ride over to your friend's house, but I want you to call me when you get there. Or maybe your parents might even have put some, you know, find my phone tracking software on your phone, which is a good thing too. You know, it's not a bad thing or anything to be ashamed about, because they love you and they want to make sure that you're okay. So they may even be able to see where you are as you're riding your bike from your house to your friend's house. I don't think that's at all unreasonable. I think that these are freedoms that come gradually, but by the time someone gets to your age, it's appropriate for that. Now, I'm not trying to second guess your parents, and they may have reasons that I know nothing about. So ultimately, it's up to them. But it's certainly within your reach to say, Mom and Dad, can I talk to you about this? Can we renegotiate maybe some of the freedoms that I don't have yet? You know, if you said, wait until you graduate from high school and then we'll talk, well, by the time you graduate from high school, you're going to be legally an adult. And wouldn't it be a shame all the way around if you weren't allowed to ride your bike to your friend's house until you're legally an adult? So I would have that conversation with your parents, okay? And what I would request is, if you don't mind, when you've had that conversation with your parents and you've done the things that I'm recommending to you, you don't have to do any of these things, I'm just suggesting them to you, then my advice would be, if you can, if it's okay with them, just send me another note and let me know how things turned out. Now, you don't owe me any explanations. Your parents certainly don't owe me any explanations. But I'm concerned about you. And I want to make sure that you're okay. And I have a feeling that when you talk to your mom and dad and you explain this to them, that they're going to see, okay, we have a situation. We really need to work on this so we can help our son. And I'm very confident because they love you. They want you to be happy. And maybe, you know, I don't know, if you're the oldest child, maybe you're the oldest son, and they haven't yet gone through the experience of loosening the apron strings. And if you're not familiar with what that means, the apron strings is a way of saying that mom and dad love their children and they want to solve problems for their children and take care of their children and make sure their children are doing what they should do. And as the children get older, when you cut the apron strings, that's a figure of speech. What it means is you basically give your children freedom. And you can't control them when they get to a certain age. And that would be typically 18, 19 years old. You don't control your children anymore. You stand back and you wait and see if all of your efforts at being a good mom and dad will pay off. And if mom and dad are good, and I'm not talking about your mom and dad, but just any parents, if they're good and diligent and they love their children and they give good example and they are wise and prudent and loving and just and forgiving and all the things that we want people to have and want them to do, then when the child gets old enough, he's going to have absorbed those things and they'll see that their efforts have paid off handsomely because their children enter into adulthood doing the right thing and not doing the wrong thing, etc. So those are my thoughts, and I'm really glad you wrote to me. I do hope you'll be able to write me back and let me know that things are getting better, and Cyrus will be sending you a link so that you can share this audio with your parents. That's something I really must insist on, though, okay? Make sure that your parents know about your writing to me and my talking about your email on the air. It's important for them to be involved with this at every level. Okay? I wish you all success. Thank you. Well, Cyrus, I mean, you've got kids who are in that age range, and, you know, let's just look at it from that standpoint. We're not going to, like, look at your specific kids. But as a father, if your 13-year-old came to you and said, I've reached the point where I don't know what to do. So I sent a letter to Mr. Madrid on the radio to see what he would recommend. What would your reaction be to that as dad of that 13-year-old?
I think I would feel a little disappointment that he didn't come to me, you know, right out of the gate. But then I would also realize there must be a reason he didn't come to me. And so I'd want to open that communication up, because we must keep communicating with our kids, because they're on their own life journey and having their own experience. I don't know. When I grew up, Patrick, I didn't have any parental supervision. I was like a feral child that roamed the streets.
I knew kids like you.
Yeah. I actually got caught sneaking back into the house once, and my mom turned on the light and she said, "Why don't you just use the front door, you dummy?" She used different words, but
different words. Yeah. So you're giving the PG version, right?
Right. So I made it just look like I was sneaking out so I could be cool like my other friends that were sneaking out. And when I say snuck out, we were the most harmless group of we were harmless.
You were the Goonies.
We were the Goonies. Really. I mean, and we were playing video games and playing basketball. I mean, we were up to nothing bad.
This young man said, he said, "I've asked my parents numerous times if there's anything I can do to change that. But all they have ever said was finish high school and then we'll talk."
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, and we don't know how accurate that is. But I guess what the point is, the kids that I knew that had restrictive parents, once they did go to college, they made terrible choices. And I didn't make those choices because I had more freedom. I probably had too much freedom, but I was lucky with having good friends with good parents that kept me, you know, out of trouble. But these poor kids that were totally restrained and had no life experience, it was almost like they missed out on some common sense. So you gotta let your kids, because they were so structured, so shielded. Right, it's so important. When I'm looking at my own kids, it's like I'm not raising children. I'm raising future adults that are going to take care of themselves.
But who are children now. We can't treat our children as if they were adults.
Right. It's a fine line.
Because some parents make the mistake in that direction. They make the mistake in like treating their 12-year-old
like best friends.
Right. And granting them freedom and privileges that a 12-year-old has no business having.
Absolutely.
Then they get other problems that way. Just for my part, and I know we have to take a break, your upbringing and my upbringing were different in this sense, and that is that my mom and dad were vigilant, and did they have restrictions. They had certain things that, you know, on Saturday morning, was the day I thought I'd be able to sleep in, but no, because I was rousted out of bed and I had to do chores practically all day on Saturday, or at least that's what it felt like. But on the other hand, and this is where I appreciate my parents' sort of balanced approach, I could get on my bike. When I had free time, I could get on my bike and go anywhere. And they would just say, be home for dinner. Dinner's at 6 o'clock, be home by then. And I might be gone 3 or 4 hours and I was responsible, and if something came up, my bike got a flat tire or something, I would call them. I'd call home and let them know. But they didn't place restrictions on me. Certainly by the time I was in the 7th or 8th grade, I could roam freely and go play with my buddies, and I'd have to check in with my parents and let them know or get permission, as the case may be. But so as I was reading the letter from this young man, I was thinking about my own upbringing, and I did have restrictions and I did have certain fences around me. But on the other hand, I had far more mobility and far more freedom than it sounds like his situation is. So I appreciate that balance. And sounds like you were, you know, you had immense freedom, but you didn't misuse it because you were too busy playing video games and playing basketball.
Yeah.
Some kids do misuse it.
Yeah.
And of course, now with cell phones, that changes everything.
Well, I looked at it as I wanted to get as far away from what my life experience was. So I looked at the choices my mom and her friends were making, and I was like, I'm not going to do those things because I don't want that life.
Right, right. Well, yeah, it's interesting to look back and get some perspective, but at the same time, to apply that perspective to the here and now. with your own kids.
Yeah.
As you're doing.
Talk to your kids and be honest. Be honest with them.
And don't be afraid to give them a little extra freedom. I realize that it can be fear-inducing because you're worried about the Zodiac killers out there and you're worried about all the what-ifs. But 99 times out of 100, those what-ifs never happen. And so better, it seems to me, to give that autonomy gradually when it's age-appropriate with necessary restrictions. But the more you do this for your children as they get older and they demonstrate that they're, you know, deserving of it, the more responsible it will teach them to be, because they'll realize that there is a cause and effect. You know, the cause of my freedom is because of my good behavior and because of my honesty, or because of I do what my parents want me to do and I don't do what they don't want me to do. So I realize if I continue down that path, I will have more freedom. And kids like freedom. So if they earn it and demonstrate that they're, you know, responsible enough, it can be a good situation all the way around. Well, thanks, Cyrus. Thanks for weighing in on that. We're going to take a break and we'll come right back. The number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Talk about a feral kid. Ferris Bueller. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Keeping it relevant. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
All right, let's get to the phones, where the number always is 888-914-9149. We'll start off with Debbie in Mayville, Wisconsin. Good morning, Debbie.
I was just calling in regards to the boy who wrote you the email. I was in sixth grade, and we moved out from Milwaukee to the area we are now, and I went to a parochial school, and I'm hoping this will help him, even though he's a little older. But I was, being at a parochial school, you'd think that it would be, you'd be good, but I was teased a lot. I had braces. I was called Brace Face. And I remember crying many times, like going home, and I had to ride the high school bus actually to go home.
Yeah.
So I just think that I cry. I didn't talk to my parents about it. They both worked, and I didn't want to hassle them with it, so I figured it out for myself. But I realized that I wanted to be the person that I was, and I didn't want to change. If people liked me for who I was or at the time, that's fine. So I would sit on the curb even at lunchtime and read a book. And if they wanted to come up to me, that's fine. I wasn't going to push myself or try to join a group or anything, because they all have the little groups. And so it ended up working out okay. And I realized that some of the boys that even teased me liked me enough that they would tease me, but they also would show on the side that they didn't want to be mean either. So I just think that, and living in the day that we lived in, too, I felt like we could ride our bikes anywhere we wanted when I was younger. And the day and age was different. Today I worry about my grandkids even being out in the store with me, because of so much that goes on. And
yeah,
so I just wanted to, like, let him know that, you know, just be yourself. If you're comfortable with you, and yeah, we all want friends, but I made more, people remembered me from my grade school, even high school. They'd say hi and know me by name, and I didn't know who they were. But I was nice to everybody. I didn't treat them mean. I would be, you know, wouldn't befriend them, but I would just say hi or smile. I would just go on my way, because I didn't want to change. I knew that God loved me, and I knew my parents loved me, and that's really all that mattered.
Yeah, the dynamics of childhood interaction always seem to involve a pecking order and cliques and bullying and all of the, you know, the standard things kids are just prone to doing. And if you're the kid who's getting picked on, there's not much you can do about it. You can tell your parents, tell the teacher. Sometimes that invites even more bullying. So it sounds like your policy was just simply keep your head down, keep moving forward, and don't get caught up in all of the bullying and other things, right? When they called you Brace Face, I'm sure you didn't enjoy it, but you couldn't really fight back effectively against it, could you?
So that's probably where my, you know, my crying came in after the fact of, and just, I just realized that. And sometimes I do feel that kids are jealous of you. And I think that's a lot of it. They're jealous. And because if people do come up to you, they have, that's how they show they're jealous. They just are mean, which isn't right. But I do feel that comes out a lot. Jealousy comes out a lot. I've seen it in my own kids with other kids. And I feel like, make your friends. Like, if they're not true friends to me either, if they're not going to, you know, they're going to tease you along with other people, that's not a true friend. A true friend will stand by you for, you know, through anything, and they'll also back you and say, hey, that's not nice to say. So
that's true.
There's a lot of things that,
but
yeah,
you know what, though? As you know, as you, oh, I'm sorry, Debbie. I was just going to say, as you remember from being a kid, that's something that is clear to you now. It's clear to me now, but it wasn't clear to me when I was in eighth grade. I didn't have that level of insight and wisdom. And you know, you want to be liked and you want to be in with the people who seem cool, and you don't want to be the reject, you don't want to be the pariah. It's tough to be a kid, and I would have to think even more so now with the shaming that goes on and bullying that goes on social media. You don't even have to be in the presence of those kids nowadays. They can make your life miserable through their phones. So I think by comparison, you and I had it easy when we were growing up, don't you think?
Yes. I think, like, helicopter parents, too. I've seen it myself. I've seen where kids are so restricted that later on they're wild child in life later on. And it's just sad because, I mean, you can love somebody, but you still have to give them some freedom to right. do, you know, kind of make choices for themselves. Otherwise, they're never going to grow up. And I understand that some parents are so fearful. And I don't know if this boy comes from a family of more than just one. If he's the only child, I didn't get that.
He didn't say.
And if he has... Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe he's an only child, and they're so fearful of losing him that they don't want him to do anything.
Could be. Yeah. I mean, I could easily imagine that. It's funny because the Waltons that you've heard me refer to on the program from time to time, there's actually at least one episode that deals with this very issue, an overprotective father who just, because he's got one daughter, he does not give her any room to maneuver at all. And, of course, it doesn't work out that way. There's a happy ending. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying, Debbie, and I appreciate your insights. Thank you. And I hope it does make it better for this young man who wrote to me. I have a feeling that not only will he be listening to this, but hopefully his parents will as well. Thank you. Let's go to Beth now, listening in Northwest Indiana. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. My question is, if your family, so your mom and dad and your siblings, have left the church in the faith, and they kind of criticize me about it, what can I do? I mean, I'm praying rosaries and trying to fast and stuff, and I guess just want recommendations of how to try to bring them back to the faith. And yeah, they can just be very rude about it, so it's hard.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Do you mind if I ask how old you are, Beth?
I'm in my mid-30s.
Got it. You sound very youthful. So you're not at home with your parents, right? You're not under their thumb, obviously. You're out on your own, right?
No. I'm married with kids. Yep. I've been out of the house for a long time. But I'm just prayers for siblings that are married with kids. And, so I guess it's just sad, right? Because they raised me with Catholicism, and they've completely left the faith.
Did they go into any other religion, or are they just sort of free-floating?
Kind of Eastern religion, and then the other sibling is into the Bible, so Christian, but not...
Okay. But not Catholic Christian. Got it.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were going to church, but then they completely stopped, so...
Mm-hmm. Well, my first advice, and I wrote a whole book on this very topic, Beth, it's called Search and Rescue, How to Bring Your Family and Friends Into or Back into the Catholic Church. We can get a link on Twitter for you if you'd like to see that. Or you can just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and we'll have a link there. But my first advice would be show them by your good example that you have something that they don't. Now, I don't mean that in a condescending way. I certainly don't mean it like, you know, ha, ha, ha. I don't mean it like that. What I mean is show them by your fidelity to Christ and your faith and your joy and your fulfillment in being a wife and a mother and let it reflect. What did Jesus say? He said, let your good works shine before men that they may see them and give glory to your Father in heaven. I think your example would be what Jesus was talking about. not that you're being showy or ostentatious or artificial, but just let them see mm-hmm. that you're not ruffled by their decisions. You're not defensive about it. You're not angry about it. You feel bad for them because you love them, but your serenity is not jeopardized by them saying these rude things to you. That has a habit, mm-hmm. it seems to me, or it has a tendency to cause other people to stop and think about, you know, every time I make fun of her, she just smiles. She doesn't say anything. She doesn't return a mean comment for a mean comment. This is actually one of the mm-hmm. phenomena that you'll notice with cursing and swearing. And this happens like whether it's school or sometimes on the job, when they figure out that so-and-so, oh, Beth, she never curses. And then they have a tendency to stop cursing around you because they realize that you're, mm-hmm. you know, you don't go that way. So that'd be my first advice. Second advice would be if they press you on this issue, then you might say, well, help me understand this. You taught me to believe all these things to be true, and I do believe they're true. What happened to you? Mm-hmm. You know, ask them, how did they lose their faith? Why did they turn away? And mm-hmm. it may be the first time anyone's ever asked them that. It might be the first time they've ever asked themselves that. And perhaps mm-hmm. you can help mm-hmm. bring to the surface what those reasons are. Do you have any inkling of what they might be?
Yeah. For my one brother, it was the abuse scandals, and you talked to a priest, and the priest said, well, it's never going to go away, which is mind-boggling that the priest would. So it just turned my brother off, and he just stopped going. I mean, the deacon, they would do dinner together with the deacon and his wife, and so it's just sad to me that they completely left. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they're pro-life, so in that regard, it's awesome, but it's just like regards to coming back to the church is hard. But mm-hmm. but everyone else, I don't really know. So
okay. And everybody has their own reasons. And usually they don't say what those reasons are. They might give other reasons to mask what mm-hmm. the real reasons are. It could be laziness. It could be they never really had a heartfelt relationship with Jesus. Maybe it was all just... Mm-hmm. you know, the routine that they were used to. They never really had a prayer life, possibly. It could be a moral issue, perhaps. There may be something going on in their lives that they realize, well, if I do this and I pretend to be a Catholic, I realize that there's a conflict there. So if I just stop being Catholic, I can do this and not feel that tension. Some people go down that road. Mm-hmm. But in that book, I give you a lot of techniques, suggestions on things that you can say, how you can take a conversation and help direct it into an area where it might help them to think. I'll give you an example of what I mean. So let's say there's some terrible natural disaster or some, God forbid, some, you know, accident or attack or something. And I've done this myself, where you're just talking to them and you're not talking at all about God or anything, but you just say, you know, isn't it amazing how suddenly people die and these people woke up that morning never expecting that this would be the last day of their lives. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. And then let them comment. And then say, you know, it sure makes me want to be ready to go so that whenever my life ends, that I'll be prepared. And then you can just leave and see what they say. They may say something, may not say something. And then you can ask them, well, you know, where do you think you'll go when you die? And see, what's happening is you're not lecturing them. You're not teaching them, although you really are, but you're doing it in a roundabout way. By asking questions like this, and even if they shut down the conversation, so like let's say it ends with, well, where do you think you'll go, heaven or hell, when you die? And maybe they want to end the conversation at that point. I'll bet you that question is ringing in their minds for a long time to come. Where will I go when I die? Will I go to heaven? Will I go to hell? So even just little seeds like that can be enough to help move things in a good direction over time. You see.
Okay, great. Well, this is all very helpful. And then just tell me the name of the book because I'll write it down on pen and paper.
Sure. It's called Search and Rescue. Subtitle is How to Bring Your Family and Friends Into or Back Into the Catholic Church. And Cyrus will get a link.
Is it on Kindle?
Yeah, I think it is on Kindle. You should be able to find it there.
Okay, most of my books are on Kindle. Stuff on Kindle.
Okay. It's easier and it's less bulky than carrying the books around, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Thank you, Beth. God bless you. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We do have a line. It just opened up. 888-914-9149. I'm coming right back with more of your phone calls. And by the way, did you sign up to enter the sweepstakes to possibly win one of the 200 outdoor nativity sets we're giving away? Tomorrow is the last day that you can sign up for this. Go to relevantradio.com/nativity and get signed up. I'll be right back. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a new free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com/Madrid.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are back. As promised, the number to dial is 888-914-9149. There's time for you to call in. If you have a question, maybe you need a second opinion. Maybe you have some situation that you'd like some advice on. I'm here for you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Mary Ann now in Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Mary Ann.
Good morning. Well, first of all, let me just quickly say that I got a chuckle this morning when you told, when you were talking, giving advice to the young boy, the homeschooled boy, and you mentioned Saturday mornings and how, you'd think, hey, I'm free. Woo, go play, whatever. And no, I had the same experience. I would wake up on Saturday mornings and I, you know, a lot of times we have the windows open. I could hear the big wheels just going up and down the sidewalk. And I'd be going, oh, yeah, I knew I wasn't going to get out there till probably at least 10 o'clock, 10:30 that morning. So anyway, lots of chores on Saturday.
And I don't know what it was. We didn't have a huge yard and, you know, but it seemed like there were endless chores every Saturday.
I could never outrun those chores.
It was endless.
And my mom would always find something else for me to do. I'm like, oh, come on. I just want to go play. But I had a question I've been meaning to call you about. My last confession, the priest gave me a penance that I was just, I guess, just too, I'm nervous to ask him to explain. I never received a penance like this before. He asked me to complete an act of self-denial. And I struggled a bit with that because I wasn't confident that the penance that I chose would be sufficient enough for God. So I kind of wanted to.
So like giving up chocolate one day, is that really?
Giving up chocolate right. I like my morning coffee. So it's like, okay, so if I skip coffee all day, is that going to be enough? I ended up doing several little, you know, acts of denial. But I wasn't sure how deep I should go with that.
I wouldn't let it bother you. This, generally speaking, my thought is that in the confessional, when a penance is specific, it's much more helpful because I understand specific and I can do that and I can remember that. But if it's something ambiguous and, you know, think happy thoughts about that person you gossiped about, it does come across as kind of, like, that doesn't really amount to very much. Now, I would still do that if that's what the priest said. I'm not saying I would ignore him. But I'm in not being a priest, I don't have to sit in the confessional and give penances. But as a penitent, as a person who's gone to confession a million and one times over my lifetime, I always really benefit when the penance is specific. And I think most people probably would. So in your case, I wouldn't let it bother you, but I think your instinct is correct that if you felt in your heart that the penance was, you know, kind of insubstantial, that by doing something more in that area by, you know, give up coffee and give up dessert or give up salt on your food, things like that, that's good and pleasing to God. And those are good faith gestures that you really want to abide by the penance. And if you have a sense that it's not enough by doing more, you're not earning anything, but you're showing your devotion and your love for the Lord by trying to really live out that spirit of penance. I think it's a good thing, personally. And in the future, maybe in the next time, if that priest gives you something insubstantial or ambiguous like that, you could say, Father, would you mind giving me a penance that's more specific? And maybe he will, maybe he won't, but it couldn't hurt to ask.
Right. Okay. I didn't know if that was an appropriate thing to do in the confessional.
Yeah. I remember more than once having a conversation with a priest, you know, and the priest would say, that's not a sin. And I had to say, Father, that is a sin. And,
Wow.
Yeah, so there have been some moments where sometimes, you know, and I don't go into confession for any other reason than to have my sins forgiven. So I'm not there to in any way ever argue with any priest. But over the years, from time to time, I think priests maybe who had some deficient training in the seminary or they were taught some odd ideas, and that carries through the more traditional way of giving a penance that's certain prayers or certain actions or almsgiving or something. I think everyone can get their head around that and can do that. And it's specific. So just my two cents.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Marianne.
That's very helpful. I appreciate that. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. God bless you. How about Fabiola in Colorado Springs, Colorado? Hello, Fabiola.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was calling you just to give you an update. I called you about 6 months ago. I was very distraught because one of my younger siblings, who identified as gay and does drag shows and is very anti-God, anti-Catholic, had asked me to... You remember this?
I remember. I think it's your name I remember, but now that you mention that, I do remember the call.
Yes, I've been meaning to call you because I did have a difficult conversation with him, but thanks to your... you know, advice. I was not wanting to have that conversation, but you did encourage me to stand my ground and, you know, be kind, but be firm. And I did. And the conversation, there was tears, there was anger, there was apologies on both of our behalves for hurting one another with unintentionally.
That's good.
But in that conversation, he also alluded, he didn't say specifically, and he said, that and he said he wasn't ready to share more, but he alluded to the fact that he was hurt by someone in the church. Now, he didn't say how or what, but it was very impactful for him. And I, in the moment, I said, wow, I'm so sorry that has been your experience. You know, that is not of God, you know, and I'm sorry it hurt you. And that really was healing. You know, we both cried. And he said, okay, well, I won't, you know, I won't put boundaries on you. Don't put boundaries on me. And I said, well, I don't. And I love you and I want the best for you, but also respect me.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, since then, by the way, a text message saying, I'm sorry for being so difficult and I love you so much, he said.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's really a beautiful thing.
Since then, I thank you for that because I wouldn't have done it. I would have, you know, shied away from it to avoid the pain and all that. And I feel like it did bring us closer and it moved the needle closer because we had an honest but difficult conversation in love. So I just wanted to share that and thank you and just to, you know, witness for others who may be in that situation with loved ones that, you know, don't shy away because I was going to, and then you advised me otherwise. And although it was hard, I think it was for everyone's greater good.
I am so happy to hear this. And I'm delighted to hear that there's some, I don't know what the right word is, maybe some repairs that have been done on the relationship by having that conversation. And as you say, I'm sure it was not an easy one, and it's the kind of thing that we tend to want to shy away from, conflict avoidance, you know. But in some cases, having that real good faith effort to talk about something, even though it causes some pain or difficulty, the breakthrough potential is really good. And I'm glad it happened with you. I really am glad it happened with you.
Yeah, and I'm hoping it softens him a little, you know, him towards healing and coming back to God and the church. I'm not going to lose faith. I keep praying, but mm-hmm. it was an important lesson. I needed to be brave as well and to not, you know, to be brave for God and just stay, you know, stay my truth, even though it's hard.
Right. And that, you know what it also does? It opens the door, and you know this, but it opens the door for further communications like that, or it leaves the door open. So it didn't get slammed shut. It's open and you can walk through it again. And who knows how many more times these conversations will happen, and maybe it will lead to a change of heart for him. Please, yeah, God.
That's my hope.
Yeah.
That is my hope. Thank you. And I just wanted to call you. I've been meaning to call you back, and I thought, I always am so busy hearing everybody's, you know, mm-hmm. stories and your advice that I thought, let's do this. Someone out there might need to hear that and to be nudged in that
yes.
direction.
Yeah. Well, you're learning about the virtue. The virtues involve going out of yourself and learning to do things that would not otherwise be easy for you. So it's a form of courage in a way, where you're learning that sometimes you have to risk pain or confrontation, but the goal or the potential benefit outweighs the risk. And isn't that a neat yes. lesson to finally experience for yourself?
Oh, yes. It was powerful, because prior, I think in my mind, peace, you know, equals what God wants, peace. So right. don't stir the pot, you know, because it's not going to be peace, but yes, that's true. And sometimes in order to get to true peace, you need to also be courageous and stand right. for what's true and right.
That's right. It's called by St. Thomas Aquinas fortitude. So he talks about the cardinal virtues. And why don't we just pause on that for a minute, because you're experiencing what that's like. So the four of them are prudence. And what that means is to know, you know, what is the right thing to do in a given situation. You know, a prudent person tends to make good decisions. And then justice, and that's to deal rightly with other people and to give them what they deserve. And in this case, your brother deserves your honesty, and you're loving him enough to speak the truth to him. And then fortitude, which is, we say courage, you know, in a more secular way, but fortitude is where you go forward knowing that there may be some risk or some danger, and that courage or that bravery that you have in the Lord is there for a purpose, for a goal, not because you're rash, but because you're willing to run the risk to achieve a good thing. And then the last of the four is temperance, and that's where your reason moderates your response to things like your appetites, for example, or the desire for pleasure, or things of that nature. And so these virtues tend to go together. And so as you're thinking about this relationship with your brother, and you're now seeing the value of fortitude, ask the Lord to imbue you with more of prudence and more justice and more temperance, and yes, more fortitude too. And you'll be in an even better situation and better able to help him in the future. Thank you for calling in today.
Of course. Thank you for all you do. God bless you. You're in my prayers, you and your team.
Thank you very much. And we reciprocate heartily. We will be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.